Good evening, this is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. My guests this evening are Vicky Bradley, Executive Director, Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, Jack Fonder, Executive Director, Manufacturing Resource Center, and Thomas Stott, Executive Director, Lehigh Valley International Airport. This evening is Executive Director's evening. I'm just watching.
You're in good company.
Becky, gentlemen, welcome. This evening, we are going to review the results of the Cameron Afshar Greater Chamber of Commerce Survey of Local Businesses for April 2019. Just a little background, we have been doing this since 1998, so we have sort of a good long-term data to compare events with. According to the April survey, business sentiment and the overall confidence in the local economy dropped by 7% below January in April. This is the second drop in a row for this index since October, when it reached its all-time high at 69.4. The April drop was across the board, with exception for the index of expected future revenue. All other indices dropped. Should be emphasized that despite the 10% drop in the overall index in the last two quarters, which is pretty sizable and was unexpected, the index is still trending in the range which is associated with strong growth in the valley. Now, this was a surprise for me. I did not expect to see this kind of drop, although we are still in the range which is associated with strong growth, but it just showed a drop. Any of you guys have seen anything like that, Becky?
Well, I know the amount of development plan activity that we have is higher than it's been since the economic downturn. It's grown exponentially. And usually that's a sign that the economy is good, but also when it gets to the point where it's really, really, really a lot of activity is what we have, it's usually a sign that you're hitting some semblance of a plateau or maybe a slight dip. And I think we're probably at that point. Mm-hmm. When you see the types of developments coming in and you see, you know, industrial development 4 miles off a highway, you know, and it's a lease condition, that may not be as sustainable as something closer to a 22 or a 33 where there's a good facility. And usually that's a sign that you're hitting that point of inflection.
Inflection. So you're looking at the economy getting to the top of the hill.
Yes. Yes. I could be wrong.
Well, you're the keeper of the data, so yeah. You would know.
On the land development side anyway, yeah.
Tom, what about you? You guys see all these people embarking. Air traffic is a major indicator of where the economy is going. So what's your observation?
Sure. And so the airport, obviously an economic engine for our region. And I think you're seeing kind of that synergy of the feed between the region and the airport. We hope Becky's wrong. We hope that the economy is still churning away, particularly locally. From our perspective, just coming out of March and looking at the traffic results there, 15.5% increase in March. Last mm-hmm. March, we had a 14.3% up. So continuing to see growth in the travel sectors. And so leisure markets up, adding some new destinations. And certainly a lot of investment still occurring at the airport in terms of construction and a lot of investment in facilities. And so how that impacts the economy here in terms of all of the construction trades, the soft skills, the consultant trades, and so forth. So we're still seeing this thing chugging upward.
You are obviously tearing up the Ray Street north of the airport and expanding on that area. And, of course, you delighted all of us by telling that you're shutting down the runways this weekend. So
right.
Where is this going?
To New York?
That's one.
Yeah, we're working hard at really reinvesting in infrastructure, as you point out. And so a lot of the exterior roadways, Race Street, Airport Road, we've seen improvements in widening taking place there, and really not an airport project per se, but all part of that, ultimately that FedEx ground development. We're seeing that continue. Airport Road, from the main entrance at Airport Road down to 22, that'll be a project this summer. We're looking to see that move forward in terms of a widening and capacity down to 22. But right, so our intersection, a lot of capital projects, a very large capital program this year, and we'll be seeing a lot of investment in infrastructure to keep pace with the 180 acres of pavement we have at the airport.
Okay, Jack, you deal with the manufacturing sector, and obviously you would see ahead what is happening in their plans. We ask them what they are planning to do, but you see that for real. So What do you see?
Well, we've obviously enjoyed many years of good growth in manufacturing. I mean, we're pushing the ninth year, I think. We kind of led the recession out of the recession, you know, back in the day. Tariffs this year have been scary for a lot of manufacturers. I think there's a lot of kind of slow down to see what where things are going. Workforce has been an issue for growth. Trying to find even entry-level people are very difficult to find one that'll stay. And so I think companies are kind of resting a little bit right now. Most are doing well. I'm not saying there's any real problem out there, but I anticipated that we all kind of anticipated that 2019, 2020 might be a little slow area until we get growing again, but I think it'll the long term I see in manufacturing is still very good.
Tom, looks like you are alone here.
The other guy. We're cautiously optimistic, yeah. Right? Yeah.
True. One of the events that happened we discovered in our survey was the drop in the index of hiring over the last 6 months. This index dropped by 9% in April, after another 4% drop in January. So it is really much lower than it would have been otherwise if any of these were moderate adjustments. And that is somewhat a surprise, because we look at the employment numbers in the Valley, which are actually going up. Mm-hmm. And it is not that the participants in our survey said that they are not hiring or they're laying off. It is just that the rate at which they were hiring has shown some slowdown as we are going forward. And that is a the issue, particularly both looking at their plans for next 6 months, as well as their what they have done in the previous 6 months. Both of those have been moderated as we are looking to go forward. And that is part of that, of course, is as Jack mentioned, that lack of expertise that people need to hire. But what is happening to our workforce? Becky, you have all these data about what has been in future forecast of where the labor force is going in Lehigh Valley, population growth. Is this just an issue that labor force has thinned out and we don't have the expertise, or is it a different thing? Because we still have about officially 12,000 people who are looking for a job.
Sure. We're actually revising our employment forecast right now by sector. So we're hoping to have that out by the middle of summer. But just looking at our commuter patterns, is that ties back to employment forecasts. We know our employment forecast is going to be a little bit higher. The number of jobs available is growing. There is still some job creation, even though, you know, your survey has shown that it's declining a little bit. But we know that we need workers from counties and regions around us to fill the jobs that we have. That's probably part a workforce issue, part, a housing issue, part a lifestyle choice issue. I mean, there's a million things that factor into that. But we do know that we're seeing a lot more people commuting in from the north than we've ever seen, that we've seen at least in the last two decades. We're also seeing a lot more people come in from the West, Berks County and the like, and a lot more people now coming up here to work from the Philadelphia region, your Bucks, Montgomery County, in greater numbers than we've seen before. But we still have a whole lot of people that are living here and going to work outside of King of Prussia, which is our biggest commuter movement, or into parts of Western New Jersey. Very few people live here and actually work in, Manhattan, as is, the fable, the popular tale that circulates. But at the end of the day, I mean, we're clearly interdependent on things around us, but we clearly stand on our own in our own right as well. But it just reinforces the fact that we're more and more part of the megalopolis and this global economy, which I think long term is fantastic, not only for our workforce, but the economy in general.
Tom, what about you? What do you see in that movement?
Yeah, so I think certainly the airport, when we look at what happens there, we're very seasonal as well. So employment is really driven by choices by whether it's passenger air carriers and their routes, cargo carriers. So we're seeing an uptick. So we're really anticipating some hiring this summer to be able to fill the demand. So I'm hoping we're going to find people from somewhere that Becky's talking about to come here to basically fill some of these sectors and getting into, we're competing in a lot of these areas with aircraft ground handling services, for example, and just being able to have personnel to bring an aircraft in, service the aircraft, turn it out for the next trip, and that's really competing on the manufacturing sector, transportation and warehousing sector. So we're really looking across kind of that same employee base and how we, continue to look to be competitive to attract workers and particularly retain workers.
Any new airlines are coming in?
No new airlines at this point, but certainly some new air service. So, we just started some additional service. April for Chicago. American is now operating to Chicago in addition to United. And May 17th, we're seeing new service to Nashville, which has been very popular already, just based on bookings. And then June, we're seeing some Savannah, Hilton Head area. So just... from where we sat last year and kind of taking a look at budgeting and projections, it's always changing, and so it's a good problem to have. But we're chasing, making sure we have the personnel to be able to keep up with the new services.
Oh. Jack, what about you?
Manufacturing is kind of hit two ways. One is growth, but two is retirements of my generation, the baby boomers. We are an older industry, therefore it's probably more people in the retirement age than most other industries. Mm-hmm. So when they retire, there's a ripple effect in a company. Usually those are the senior people in the technology areas and so forth. So you get somebody promoted from the lower area in, which is a lot of training for them, but same token, then you got to hire somebody to take their spot. Or we're finding we get into automation. We get into robotics and so forth, which are taking some of the lesser skilled jobs out of the equation, which for our mm-hmm. our workforce is great because we are now able to take those people that had those jobs and train them up to the next level. Manufacturing as such, when they find a good person, they're going to stay with them because it's hard to, hard to go through that process of training and everything. So we're hit a little bit harder. That's where, in terms of the number of jobs that you're seeing added to manufacturing, it's kind of hard to know because you don't know how many are going away because of retirement. And that's so right now they're about even the way I'm looking at it. That's why, the total employment in manufacturing might be level, but in reality there's a lot of hiring going on because there's a lot of retirements like myself happening.
Well, it is a lot of people think that manufacturing is gone. It's the notion is what is gone is employment in manufacturing. The actual production is continuing with a lot less people in it. I have a client, we were looking at a facility they had, which is a few years old, maybe decades old, and they are looking at a set of automation. And when we were walking through this huge old building, with the new machines that are coming in, basically a workforce of something like, 80 people will end up becoming 5. Hmm. And as you're talking about those who are relieved from those entities to be pushed upstairs, the people who run these machines are basically computer geeks, for better word. They're computers. They just manage the machinery. They still need some people to be to help with the stuff movement and other thing, but the other guys don't even go on the floor. They are standing behind windows. Right.
There are obviously those situations. Those are usually in the bigger companies. The smaller ones still have an awful lot of those jobs. And I can't say, even on the bigger ones, I was just touring just yesterday with my grandson. They've done some automation, but really what they've done is because of the retirements, they've been able not have to hire people. So these people are still getting better jobs now, and it's not that level that you're talking there. In the normal basis, it's usually we have so many manufacturing needs right now of jobs that we just don't have the facility to get those people, and that's the issue. But the ones we have to keep, and that's the important thing right now.
Yeah, that's the issue that I've always been dealing with data, thinking about that. And Becky, what's your forecast about this switch from an environment which used a lot of people to produce these things, and with the new technology coming in, a lot fewer people will produce more?
Yeah, well, I know for sure on the transportation planning and investment side, we've now had a chance to see a 3D printed pedestrian bridge. And so, this could provide a heck of a lot of opportunity for us to take what limited transportation funding we have for bridges and, expand that out to replace more bridges, because our bridge need is greater than the money that we have available to us. So I see technology and changes and advancement in that. It definitely affecting the workforce, but the workforce, building off kind of what Jack said too, it's evolving and changing, and its abilities are growing along with the companies that are innovating these really remarkable things, like 3D printed concrete. That's just absolutely remarkable. So I think we're going to continue to gain some efficiencies, but we're going to still need workforce that can do these things that seem incredible now will become second nature over the next couple of decades.
One of the keys that I see is the STEM, STEAM, whatever you want to call it, type technology. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if kids don't have that background coming out of high school or coming out of college, their chances of, I think, getting a good job are cut down drastically from where they are today. And I think that's part of what our generation needs to be doing now, is educating the younger generation that you really need some technology, because that's where, I don't care where you are, if you're McDonald's, whatever, you're going to be, you're going to be fixing different, kiosks and things like that there. And that's the requirement right now, is we really got to get that technology base going.
Thank you. Jack, this is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY, taking our first break.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. We are starting our second segment with my guests, Becky Bradley, Jack Founder, Tom Stout. Okay, we were talking last in the first section about change in the type of jobs that are available and some that are going away. And people were saying that if the motor-driven entity or horseless carriage comes, all these people will lose their jobs. And they were absolutely right. Those people, those jobs went away. But even those people didn't necessarily lose their jobs, because there were all those new jobs created around the motor-driven carriages that needed all the other stuff. So jobs have a way of, although older jobs will go away, many newer ones come about that because of the growth of the economy will exceed the numbers in what they were. However, some items totally goes away, like there used to be a person on a train which shoveled coal into the engine. That job went away with the diesel engines and now electric engines. Nobody needs to shovel coal. So it is the evolving of the jobs that are happening in the region. So it is not that we are talking about the job, we will have fewer jobs. It is just different ones as we are going forward. The newest data about the Lehigh Valley shows that employment growth, payroll employment growth in the last couple of months has slowed down slightly, but still it is at a very, very high level. Over the last 6 months, people who participated in our survey indicated that they hired more people, particularly healthcare, which led the group by 3.2 net new hires. That was followed by construction, but that's understandable. We're getting warm weather is coming, so construction entities are coming. Retail is one of the entities that shows that they laid off. That's also what we are seeing happening all around as department store employment is going down and would probably continue for a while. This is part of the whole process as we are moving forward in the economy, as the technology is taking such a new and different shape. Now, in the charts that, of course, our listeners can't see, but our participants can look at, is we don't have transportation in it because the number of companies participated in our April were not enough to make a statistically significant data. However, for the first time since I have been looking at the explosion of transportation warehousing sector, we saw a drop. The businesses participating indicated that not dissimilar to retail, they are laying off more than they are hiring. And this the first time, and this could be just one observation and could be rectified afterwards, but at least as is, it was a brand new one that we observed. Becky, that was surprising to me. I thought that transportation will continue to go up, but also looking at their annual growth rate that used to be double digit up to just a few months ago, all of a sudden the giant became a normal entity. What happened?
Well, I think, too, you know, that industry is expanded exponentially because we all buy things online now. But that hits a certain point. Okay. And I think, too, you know, we're going into the summer season, which tends to be a low retail season. We might not be moving around as much as maybe they need to move around come the fall and as we gear up for the holidays there. So, you know, again, I think, you know, when you're in a high growth rate and you're adding so much of this new industry to a place, that can only happen to a certain point. And so I think that may be it. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, and that actually squares off very nicely with what we're seeing in terms of land development coming into our office, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're still seeing growth in the transportation sector in terms of new commercial facilities coming online, but they're starting to locate in places that aren't sustainable and don't necessarily make sense. The good land, by and large, that has good access to infrastructure and the things that those types of transportation-based businesses need to operate, all that's been spoken for. And as we go around and look at vacancies, there's still a fair amount of vacancy in some of the new product, for larger square footages. Those will get filled up, but I think, you know, it's always a matter of balance, like balance in all things, and I think we're probably at that point where we're balancing.
Mm. Oh, that's very interesting, Tom. Well, you guys are the center of all of these things happening.
That's what we tell ourselves. I mean, you know, I
think it's Tom's fault.
I think
nobody's flying things now. They're not driving them anymore.
And certainly we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, you know, to Becky's point, the exponential cargo growth at the airport has been remarkable over the past few years. So we're really seeing how that's sort of plateauing a little bit at the airport. We did add capacity in terms of aircraft parking for our cargo aircraft, but at some point, you know, we're going to have to look at another shift to be able to accommodate, you know, that next wave of capacity. And so it's really interesting to see kind of how that's moving, and we're really seeing a lot more freight being loaded onto aircraft outbound versus being brought in. So that's also interesting, too.
You used to have basically FedEx was the largest guy there. Now there are these airplanes on the side of them since Prime, and I'm wondering what that could be associated with.
Yeah, it's a jungle out there. So I'm not sure who that could be, but we've got a contract with logistics, and logistics operates cargo activity for different e-commerce retailers, and so ATI, Atlas, Airborne Express all operate in and out of the airport currently, and we're you know, really surprised to see the level of activity here. But certainly when you look at where the Lehigh Valley is located, as we always talk about, our proximity to a lot of the major metro areas around us, it makes a lot of sense in terms of a distribution network to be able to use this area. And I see a lot of heads nodding, but you know, to be able to use this area and get that freight moved efficiently.
Tom, we haven't got any closer to New York or Philadelphia in the last 40 years. What has happened? What's the change?
Sure. And I think it's demand. I mean, so we just talked about the retail sector and how, you know, what we used to do is truck a lot of this product into stores, and we would all head to the store, right, and head to the mall. And what we're doing now is clicking on our app on our phone and having it sent directly to our door. And so how do we continue to accommodate that demand, and what strains and stresses does that put on the system? And certainly Becky has a lot of data and interest and analysis going on that. But I think, you know, it's really just a function of how consumers are interacting and buying products today.
Are drones going to fly out of the airport?
Not anytime soon. Yeah, the FAA is working on that one, and stay tuned. So we've got certainly a lot of interest in drones and what drones could do and how they could be part of the equation. And I think it's really a safety component, right? So it's just a matter of how we're going to integrate them into the airspace system. But it's coming, and they're here, and we're already doing it in parts of the country, right? So there's already deliveries taking place with drones all around the country. So it's just really how do we integrate it as we get closer in and tighter into the metro areas, and particularly in airports, and maintain a level of safety.
Jack, what do you see in terms of the manufacturing part of all of this process?
Yeah, other than it takes longer to go to one place or the other, at least because of traffic. But, you know, there's been a trend in manufacturing over the last 5 years or so where companies are building plants closer to where the products are used. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that coming back from China. We see it out of Europe coming back into the United States. So I think you're getting a little more efficient in terms of the movement of a product around, which could affect a little bit about how many trucks you need when you're talking the whole scheme of thing. And here, though, and you know, obviously we have a lot more trucks coming in our own region. But I think in manufacturing, it's people are looking at agility a lot more. Same thing you're seeing about shipping product by Amazon or whatever you're talking about. They might want it red, they might want it blue, they might this. So a lot of the manufacturers are becoming very agile, so they can make changes and build things differently for the customer, which means they want to be closer to that customer. So that's kind of a change that's happening in manufacturing.
Becky, we have talked before about the self-driving or trucks and cross-country trucks and stuff like that. Where do you see that's going? Because the transportation warehousing sector, which is expanding with a lot of truck drivers, the possibility is that many of these people may need to then change their position if the truck can drive cross-country on its own.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to channel something that Jack said to me a couple months ago, that, you know, we're in the midst of another industrial revolution. We're in the midst of a transportation revolution right now, too. Tom hit on the drones is a method of transportation. Right. Definitely self-driving and autonomous vehicles is it. They're here. I've ridden in 5 different ones. One was even a mini transit bus. And so, you know, as they go through refinement of that technology, it's already slowly being deployed. It will definitely affect the trucking industry, but it's also going to affect personal vehicles just as much as it's going to affect transit. And so we're really on the edge of a really fantastic and interesting frontier. I think another thing that's part and parcel to that we don't talk enough about is every major vehicle manufacturer in the world has declared that they're going to electric power for their vehicles.
Right.
We need the infrastructure to then charge these vehicles. maybe vehicle's a wrong word, transport device, if we're throwing drones into the mix now, too.
That's right.
But, you know, that's another thing that we're working on simultaneously as we're planning for the future. But that's also reliant on another thing that's super interesting and is going to change the economy and jobs substantially, too. And that's the deployment of the Internet of Things. And the fact that we need 5G, 6G, 7, 8G, I mean, we will see that in our lifetimes in order to be able to carry the information to make these things work. Because the whole premise of, you know, autonomous vehicles is that they're connected to other vehicles so that you can be safer, more efficient, reduce congestion, theoretically reduce all of our stress. But, you know, a lot of that's to be determined. I kind of look at it like, aviation has really been the leader on autonomy. I mean, most aircraft are pretty much fully autonomous, though we don't want to talk about that. That scares people, but it's the truth. I mean, autopilot's for real.
Sure.
But, you know, another thing I think you can liken it to is the elevator. Like when those came out at the, you know, the turn of the 19th century, you had an elevator operator because people were scared to get in this elevator. But eventually the elevator operator went away because we could push the button ourselves. I think that's kind of the scenario we're in with autonomous vehicles. And as they go forward with refining the technology behind that, you know, we'll see similar things. I'm excited.
Yes, I'm too. The airplanes that you're talking about, absolutely. A friend of mine flies for one of the airlines who remain nameless. He received a letter. He used to be a fighter pilot in Vietnam. He received a letter that the flight director telling him that on last 5 or 6 flights, he has been hand-flying that airplane too long. He should use the autopilot because he's burning more gas, and gave him an estimate of how much his pleasure of hand flying the airplane cost the airline. So it is, it's very true that that is happening, and everybody sees the problem with the crash of 737 MAX, that autopilot, that part of the autopilot that tried to prevent the airplane from stalling when the airplane was nowhere close to having a stall issue, is part and parcel of this whole automation. When some of the system is reading an information incorrectly and acting upon it as a last-ditch effort, which if the airplane is stalling, that's the time machine should get in and do something. But they will be correct. I fully agree that they will be, and that's where you're going. And with manufacturing, so this process will mean a lot fewer people on the floor.
You know, it's all about efficiency. The Internet of Things, Industry 4.0, the fourth industrial revolution, is basically saying you're going to be more efficient than you've ever been in your career. We're talking at least 30-40% more efficient. Companies are all getting into that now. They're understanding it. You're going to talk about more efficiencies in transportation. Because you're going to be able to match needs to product and be able to move it around a little bit more efficient. You're definitely going to get, you know, involved in those types of things where computers will actually talk to computers. So you're going to get into things that you've never been before. You're going to get a ton of data. people going to have another whole new organization within manufacturing companies is the IT. How everybody's used to electrical, mechanical kind of things. They don't know how to get to the cloud. And that's where these new jobs are all going to be coming from. And we're seeing it already, and which is exciting.
That's great. One of the other indices that we also calculate is the index of businesses' plans for future purchases. This index also, as we observed in April, alongside all the other indices that we have, showed a dip. Although it is still in the expansion area, it is no longer in the rapid expansion section. And it is starting to show that people, in even in their planning, are becoming a little bit more cautious, thinking that, okay, where we are going, what are the potential, and particularly in purchasing, you don't want to do too much of it ahead of time. And in today's ready environment, which you can get everything done right off the bat and don't need to wait for event from happening, you have a much bigger cushion than existed in the past in terms of future orders. We got to the end of our second section. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY.
Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Brittany, and Galicia, to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 here on WDIY.
The many choices and real voices on WDIY are made possible with support from our generous, sustaining members. An automatic monthly gift of $10 on your credit card is an easy way to become a WDIY member and support the programs you love. Set up your monthly sustaining membership gift today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you.
This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY, the last segment of this evening's show. My guests this evening are Becky Bradley, Jack Fonder, and Tom Stout. Okay, guys, we talked about a variety of different expansion and the change in the use of labor. And during the break, Jack, you talked about the four stages of industrial revolution. Why don't you go over it again?
Sure. Industrial Revolution number one had to do with like water power, wind power back in the 1800s, 1700s, that time frame. When the Model T Ford was established back in the early 1900s or late 1800s, that was number two when all of a sudden you had an assembly plant and that was a new way of making things. In the 60s and 70s, all of a sudden, computers started getting heavily involved in CNC machinery and so forth. Also, early 90s, the computer was everywhere with the internet and things like that. That was an industrial revolution in that time frame. Nowadays, you're saying, how do we make it more efficient? So what people are doing, and they're going to put sensors throughout the operations floor. They're going to put sensors on trucks. They're going to put sensors on pretty much everything and analyze if this is supposed to be at this place. If it's not, how do we correct it so it's at the right place? You can also imagine if you have a machine that if all of a sudden the bearings start getting loud and so forth, and it might break down in the middle of a shift or in the middle of an important time, you can anticipate when those breakdowns are going to happen so you can fix them on a Sunday when nobody's there and things like that. So the efficiencies will go up 30-40%, which is good for an industrial country like the United States and probably not good for a Mexico or somewhere like India and so forth like that. And therefore, the importance of technology will be more important than cheap labor. And I think that's where we're going right now.
And that's the takeaway, importance of industry more than cheap right. labor. And what you are talking about is a very interesting, something we do theoretically in terms of you write a predictive model to predict what is happening and what should happen, and then write an artificial intelligence model to, okay, when these things happen, A, correct the predictive model if it is over-predicting or under-predicting. Two, what do I do? Like, send a note to the plant manager that this machine is going to go, suggestion, shut down Sunday.
Right.
And that sort of thing on particularly more efficient one is for inventory keeping, that the artificial intelligence module basically places the order. All the items are there. We are running out of this. Places an order. And if you are late or if something is necessary to come, it overnights it and has authority to do certain things and does it, and has the also capability of the at one point to say, I don't know what to do, and call a manager to come. So it is a very interesting process that it's going. And the biggest issue is, as I tell my students, if you ride a horse and run through a ravine, the horse won't jump in the ravine. In your car, you push the gas, the car goes in the ravine, doesn't have any intelligence. We use this concept of artificial intelligence to humor ourselves. The machine has none. There was intelligence by the programmer that wrote the program, but the machine, it's just a piece of inanimate object, has no intelligence. So always, I tell them, always remember, it is like a car. It goes in a ravine, doesn't have even horse sense. So write brakes in your programs. When you write a program, put a brake. If it gets to a point where things don't look right, tell it to stop. Call somebody. Just don't push the nose of the airplane down constantly. Right. One of the interesting parts of survey in April that we got is that we looked at the revenues, and the index for last 6 month revenue shows a drop. It really started back in July of last year, and slowly we are seeing a decline in that index, although it is still higher than where it was, or level with where it was in 2016. But early in 2017, early 18, went high, and then it is, I guess, coming back to more normal level. And of course, when we ask our businesses as to what they expect their revenue would be in the future, well, that's usually, obviously, positive. It is a matter of being in private enterprise business. You have to be optimistic to go out there and start a business and take all those risks and think that others couldn't, but I will do it. And a lot of people do. And that's what has built this country. 50-some percent of all the businesses in Lehigh Valley have less than 6 employees. They're small. Hmm. And that's what has built the area and nationwide as well. Also, one of the other interesting pieces of information is that we are in 118th month of this recovery, just 2 months short of the longest recovery ever, which was 120 months between April 1991 and April of 2001. And stock market is doing well, everything is going well, but we are seeing some indications of concern that it's coming up. One of the issues that we are looking at that is could become an issue is the high rate of debt that we have. National debt is now 105% of our GDP, and that is really, really high, considering that the economy is in overdrive. These are times that usually that ratio comes down. When the economy is doing very well, that ratio usually comes down, and vice versa. But we are at this point. And the biggest problem with being here is that if we run into a slowdown, the government doesn't have any elbow room for fiscal policy. Mm-hmm. Vicky, what do you see?
Well, I obviously know the transportation piece the best when it comes to this. 80% of, in general, 80% of the money for roads, bridge, transit, bike, and pedestrian investment in the country is federal. And the current federal funding bill expires next year in the fall, at the end of the federal fiscal year on September 30th. I understand that they are negotiating a bill now, but they cannot figure out how they're going to pay for it. So I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, now we're driving more fuel efficient cars, and a lot of that revenue has been based on the gas tax. They're bringing in less money from the gas tax. So they have to figure out, you know, you can either just raise gas taxes, but, you know, as we switch to electric vehicles and these other things and we become just more fuel efficient anyway, you know, that's not a long-term solution. So I think they're trying to figure out at the federal level, like, where do we go next? There's similar conversations at the state level, which in most cases makes up the 20% match to that 80% federal funds. And nobody wants to pay more taxes is basically it. So I think the fact that there's been tax cuts, that's really helped the private sector for sure. But at a certain point, less is less in the public sector. And now there's things that are at risk, like our infrastructure system. And just the transportation infrastructure system is certainly at risk if it's not addressed in the long term. So I think that might provide a little bit of window into, you know, this debt to income ratio situation that, you know, you're talking about with the national debt. Right. I mean, we're still giving out, the federal government's still giving out the same amount of money to people with less money to give out to them. So they have to borrow it from somewhere, unless there's some other way to innovate and come up with new revenues, which I think there is a lot of hope for that. Because of all of these innovations and technologies that are happening, they'll find a way to figure out how to make that profitable for society just as much as it is for business.
Yeah. Tom, your operation is run basically by federal government, most of it, isn't it?
Well, a lot of money that we do receive comes from the federal government through the FAA to fund capital improvement projects, some state money in there, and a lot of local money generated locally by the authority. No taxpayer money per se goes into the operation of the airport. So, you know, just basically, you know, confirming what Becky's saying, we just saw the reauthorization of the Airport Improvement Program Act, and at the end of 2018, and for the first time in over 12 years to see that. You know, instead of a temporary authorization, actually having a bill now for 5 years is great. And so we have a dedicated funding stream for 5 years, but it's flat. And there's an incredible shortfall across the country on funding for airport infrastructure projects, and how do we get there? So, you know, as locally, I know we're doing a lot of things that I think are entrepreneurial in terms of non-aeronautical development and other things that we can try to do to inject cash into the operation and make sure we can continue to provide local matching shares on grants, continue to fund projects that are not federally or state eligible. So it's really how we go about partnering and figuring out ways to continue to fund critical infrastructure improvements to support, you know, the growth and what is happening here.
Jack, what about you? What about your business?
Well, I think as long as, you know, the growth we're finding, people are still building new buildings. B. Braun's major expansion right now. ATAS is building a big building. We're, you know, seeing companies still buying new equipment. The interest rates are still low. Obviously, if that changes, there's going to be some issues there. I said earlier about a little bit about the tariffs. You know, we need a free market to be able to trade and so forth. So the concept of a tariff is great, but it's hurting so many of the manufacturing companies, like this aluminum problem and so forth. If we do get this major problem with China, that's going to cause some major impacts across this country, in my opinion. So I think we got to keep the free enterprise system going, and I think that's, you know, that's critical. Debt is an issue, but in terms of the manufacturing companies themselves right now, they're guarded. But if they see an expansion, you know, concept and opportunity makes sense, they're going for it.
The issue of debt is always in relationship to possibility of rising interest rates, because the debt, when it is there, somehow it will be paid, and it will be paid either through high rate of inflation that has been done in the past, depending on different methods that it's done, or high taxation. I mean, after World War II, debt to GDP ratio was 124%. But then very high taxation during Eisenhower period, the top tax rate was 91%. So it is a, there are ways of doing that and paying. And the economy prospered, actually. It was very prosperous right after the war with all the exports to Europe and elsewhere that happened. But again, all of those happened because of free trade. And the fact that the Europeans were basically rebuilt with the donation of money by Marshall Plan. It wasn't a trade. It was just dumping money on Europe to, back then, prevent Soviet Union from taking over the whole place and expand communist ideology. And as a result, it created a lot of trading partners, and all economies expanded. Trade benefits all. There are, of course, times that trading partner may try to abuse the system, but generally free trade is the best way of doing things. But still, with the economy at the expansion level it is, this rate should have been coming down. And it is actually, according to Congressional Budget Office, is going up. And that will become a burden that now we are kicking down the road, but we're going to pay it with higher interest rate and higher taxes at the end. One of the major coincidental indicators about the economy is the amount of truck tonnage. This indicates where, basically shows how much we're buying. We're still, it had to be shipped, even if it is air flown to an airport, still has to be shipped to people's home before Tom's drones take over. Still, the truck tonnage counts. And this indicator, which was going up very, very rapidly over the last 3 months, has started to go sideways. And that is the only, not the only, but one of the concerns that I'm seeing on the horizon. Also, the flattening of the term structure of interest rates, which means the short-term interest rate goes up while long-term interest either goes down or stay flat. And eventually it inverses, meaning short-term interest rate being higher than long-term. So if you want to borrow money for 10 years, you get a lower rate than if you want to borrow it for 3 months. It is not intuitive, and it is an indication of an issue in the economy. We are not there yet, but it is flattening very rapidly. And that's not a good event to happen. The Federal Reserve is also siphoning out a lot of excess money that is shoved into the economy. I use the word shoved because the Federal Reserve, after the Great Recession, increased the high-powered money by fivefold. Mm. Never happened in history before. The Germans were in hyperinflation when they only increased it, they doubled their high-powered money. They, of course, afterwards continued to increase. But the hyperinflation in the 1920s came to them right after they get to doubling their money supply. We have increased it by fivefold, and we have almost no inflation to talk about. But the Fed is taking action ahead of time. It's not waiting for inflation to happen and then try to scramble to do something. So they are reducing the amount of money supply and also the rest of their balance sheet. So effectively, despite the fact that they're not raising interest rate, they are embarking on a tighter monetary policy than they had before. And that will slowly be reflected in interest rates across the board on everything. And we have two more minutes. So Becky, what's your view on that? How would you think affects?
Well, I mean, again, I think this is kind of the theme, at least that I see, that, you know, I think things are really, they're still going very well. But, you know, at a certain point, you reach a peak and you start to level off. But the level where we're at right now is like still a really, really good place.
Absolutely.
And a heck of a lot better than we were, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Right. And so I, you know, the feds have said they're going to raise interest rates. I think people are being smart about that. Businesses are very smart. So, you know, they're preparing for some of that, too. And I think that might indicate some of the things that the business community told you in the survey.
Tom, what about that? How would these things affect your operation?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we talked about, there's still a lot of infrastructure work and things that we're seeing happening in the next few years at the airport. You know, you talked about the runway project, hangar development. A lot of...
You're going to fix the hangars too? Wow!
One at a time. And so,
as long as mine is the one first.
So we've got a number of projects moving forward, and I think we're going to continue to see these larger projects, infrastructure investment. I think that's a great thing for the local economy and jobs here, certainly. But really, it's managing the revenue piece for us. And so it's, you know, being creative, as I mentioned, just being innovative about that. I think the expenses are going to continue. A lot of capital investment is critical for us right now. And so that's going to move forward and hopefully help what's happening here. But I think it's just being creative about the revenue.
Jack, what about your members?
You take a look at the Lehigh Valley, I think manufacturing represents 18% of the GDP and 10% of the workforce, which I think shows the efficiencies that manufacturing has gotten to. Growth is still strong, but I've always heard money is the king, and I think the manufacturing base will probably keep track a little bit more of their money while they're watching over the next 6 months to two years. On how things are going, because I think they're, and I don't think that they'll get surprised. I think most are expecting some turbulence to come, and I think are taking a look at the orders they have now. What are the good orders versus the bad orders, and starting to, you know, make these small little changes now while things are still going fine, so they don't get caught with their feet flat.
Yeah, that's what the indications from the survey was. People are getting a little more cautious. This is Cameron Afshar with Lehigh Valley Discourse from WDIY. Becky, gentlemen, thank you very much for helping me tonight.
Thank you.
Okay.